This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Welcome to Community News, a program sponsored in part by the Lions Club of Rutland. And thanks to the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind for their ongoing support. In the next hour, we will be bringing you news from the July 16th edition of The Landmark. This is Mole Ryan. First up today, we have We Might Microgreens Packs Nutrition into Small Packages by Ken Cleveland. When Mark Parker's hobby growing microgreens was ready for a business name, he reached back into his roots, choosing We Might Microgreens. The name comes from my grandmother's farm in the 1950s, which operated not far from where I grow today, he said. It started simply. I wanted to grow fresh microgreens for my family and myself, Parker said. Like most people, I went down the YouTube rabbit hole and discovered there was more to it than I expected, both in terms of the initial investment in supplies and the learning curve to grow consistently well. As I got deeper into it, something unexpected happened. Watching those trays develop brought me back to my high school agricultural classes at Wachusett in a way I had not thought about in years, he said. That connection reignited something, and before long, I was investing in racks, trays, and more varieties than I had originally planned. One thing genuinely led to another, and what started as a personal project became something much bigger. Now he sells produce at local farmers markets. The process began in Princeton. Quote, We Might Microgreens is a small batch farm in Princeton, growing fresh microgreens to order for home cooks, chefs, and local food lovers. Every tray is grown and harvested specifically for each customer, which meant nothing sits in a warehouse or on a shelf, Parker explained. Though small, the plants take a lot of effort. Microgreens are grown in shallow trays using a cocoa core growing medium, watered with a plant-based nutrient solution, and harvested typically between 7 and 14 days after sowing, depending on the variety, Parker said. His current varieties include broccoli, kale, radish, pea, sunflower, spicy mix, and more, with new varieties being tested regularly. Everything is grown indoors, under controlled conditions. We Might grows from organic seed using organic practices with no synthetic fertilizers or pesticides. While the farm is not certified organic, the growing methods reflect that philosophy. What truly sets We Might apart is the freshness. Every order is harvested to order and delivered within 24 hours, which is something no grocery store can offer. He said growing them is a little harder than other plants. There is a learning curve, particularly around moisture management. Too much humidity and you risk mold. Too little and the microgreens dry out. Each variety also has its own personality. Some are forgiving, some demand more attention. That said, the cycle is short enough that you learn quickly. A tray does not perform the way you want, it gives you the feedback within 2 weeks, which is much faster feedback loop than most farming, Parker said. Although a small product, the applications are almost endless. Chefs use microgreens to finish plates, add flavor, color and texture to composed dishes, elevate soups and grain bowls, and bring a fresh element to everything from appetizers to entrees. Home cooks are discovering them on sandwiches, salads, avocado toast, and pasta, and as a finishing touch for entrees. At the farmer's market, I always encourage people to start simple by adding a small handful on top of whatever you're already making. That's usually all it takes to understand why chefs love them. Parker also offers advice for chefs and home cooks. The WeMight.com website includes dedicated articles on individual varieties covering flavor profiles, how chefs are using them, and pairing suggestions. The goal is to give both professional chefs and home cooks the context they need to use microgreens with confidence, rather than just buying a package and wondering what to do with it. There is also a chef-specific page on the site addressing freshness, ordering, and delivering logistics. Variety-specific articles are always being posted. The small microgreens come with a giant-sized nutrition. When a seed germinates, the plant concentrates an enormous amount of nutritional energy into those first leaves to fuel its growth to become a full mature plant. Because microgreens are harvested at that early seedling stage, you are capturing all of that concentrated nutrition before the plant has a chance to spread it across roots, stems, and mature foliage. It is not so much that microgreens are superfoods in the trendy sense. It is simply that you are eating the plant at the moment it is carrying the most energy per bite, Parker says. Parker does all the work himself. I wanted something I could carry myself into my retirement years with, something that kept me active and engaged without tying me to a rigid schedule or set business hours. The freedom to work on my own terms was very important. And there's plenty of work to keep him busy. Microgreens require watering 1 to 3 times per day, depending on the variety and growing conditions. And on top of that is planting, harvesting, and getting to market. It can easily become more than a full-time job if you let it. The advantage of running it myself is that I could control the pace and scale the business to whatever I want it, to whatever level makes sense at any given time. We Might is at 3 markets weekly. The Holden Farmers Market on Tuesdays from 3 to 6 p.m. The Rutland Farmers Market on Wednesdays from 4 to 7 p.m. And the Sterling Street Market in Sterling on Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Home delivery is available year-round to Holden, Princeton, Rutland, Sterling, and West Boylston with a $20 minimum order. Restaurant delivery is available throughout the Worcester area. Details, including where Parker's setups can be found, are at wemight.com, including changes to market attendance. The name is tied to some family history. Back in the 1950s, my grandparents had a farm in Holden where they raised ponies. My grandmother called it We Might. As the years passed and the ponies were gone, she converted the barn into a gathering place for the community by hosting dances for the local kids, even setting up it up as a venue for weddings and celebrations. I was close to my grandmother growing up, and the stories of We Might were always with me, Parker said. When the microgreens hobby started becoming something more, the name was the only choice. It felt like a way that I could carry forward what she had started more than 70 years ago, something small that brought people together. What I never anticipated was running into the people at the Holden Farmers Market and the Sterling Street Market who actually attended those dances as kids. I knew it was possible, but considered it a long shot. When the first gentleman approached my table asking if there was a connection to the original farm, I honestly thought he was joking, but then kept going by describing what he remembered, what it felt like as a kid going there. I had goosebumps, he said. In a way, it felt like a full circle. My grandmother turned her farm into a place where community gathered, and here I am decades later growing microgreens for that same community, meeting people at markets for the first time, watching them come back week after week. That connection is honestly what makes it all worthwhile, he says. Next up, we have Special Olympics Athletes Earn Bronze in Minnesota by Danielle Ray. Several local youth joined thousands of athletes from around the country at the 2026 Special Olympics USA Games in Minnesota last month and came home with a medal. That team that took home bronze in the 7v7 category consisted mostly of Holden Youth Soccer's Unified Sports Team members, along with a few players from Wachusett Regional High School, including 17-year-old rising senior Sean Garofoli. I couldn't be prouder of our team. It's by far the best we've ever played together. Fantastic teamwork, effort, and heart, the Sterling resident said. We suffered multiple tough losses, but we're stronger for it. Truthfully, we weren't the best team in Minnesota. We just played our hardest. our athletes outworked everyone else. I'd rather face great competition, be challenged, and grow stronger as a team than walk away with a gold medal. He went on to say, their soccer team and the Massachusetts delegation, quote, had a fantastic experience at the national games held June 20th to 26th, which brought 4,000 athletes competing in 19 sports, along with 1,500 coaches, 10,000 volunteers, and 75,000 fans from all 50 states. To the Huntington Bank Stadium at the University of Minnesota in Minneapolis. Quote, the Special Olympics community is overwhelmingly welcoming, positive, and caring. A shining example of how true community functions, Sean said, regardless of origin, ability, or anything else. Everyone is valued and supported. The opening ceremony featured performances by Demi Lovato and John Batiste, and the closing ceremony included inspiring speeches, five performances, and the symbolic passing of the torch to the next Special Olympics USA Games in 2030, which will be held in Cleveland. Sean's mom, Laura Garofoli, said watching her son compete in the games, quote, was incredibly emotional. During the opening ceremony, Sean had his arms around his teammates, all of them swaying to the music together. It was such a beautiful moment. Sean typically isn't a fan of big crowds, but he was completely in his element the whole week, she said. At the closing ceremony, he was having so much fun with his team and the whole Massachusetts delegation that they started a conga line. During the warm-ups and competitions, he was always positive and encouraging, even to the players on the opposing teams, Laura continued. Watching him so fully himself, surrounded by people who love him for exactly who he is, was something I'll never forget. After his first year being soccer captain at WRHS, Sean's coach asked him to join the Holden Youth Soccer Unified team. Quote, it was a no-brainer for me, because I have multiple close family members with intellectual and developmental disabilities, IDD, the young man said. When I joined, I never imagined our team would go as far as national games or that the other students on the team would ask me to help bring the Best Buddies chapter to Wachusett. I went from being uninvolved with inclusion-based activities to being the president of Wachusett's new Best Buddies chapter and an inclusive leader at the high school. Sterling native Lindsay Plouffe and Laura met on the sidelines at the Governor's Academy in Byfield when Sean and Plouffe's 22-year-old son Chad were competing at the State Soccer Cup a few years ago. Quote, from the moment I met Laura, I could see where Sean gets his incredible heart, Cindy said. Sean is an incredible athletic partner, kind, patient, respectful, and encouraging, and an amazing leader. He has a remarkable way of recognizing each athlete's strengths, making everyone feel included, valued, and capable. His positivity and compassion make him a role model both on and off the field. Laura is every bit as incredible. She is one of the team's biggest supporters, always cheering on every athlete with infectious energy and genuine enthusiasm, she continued. I feel so grateful that our paths crossed and that we had the opportunity to spend the USA Games together, proudly cheering on our athletes. Families like Laura and Sean's are what make unified sports so incredibly special. Cindy, a mom of two, is a special education teacher at Glenwood Elementary School in Rutland and grew up in Sterling, same as her husband of almost 25 years. She graduated from WRHS and has been living in Hubbardston with her family, which also includes a 17-year-old daughter, Olivia, for 22 years. Chad began participating in unified sports through school in 2018 and joined the Holden Youth Soccer Unified Team in 2019. I truly believe every school should offer a unified sports program because it creates opportunities and relationships that extend far beyond athletics, Cindy said. This was their family's first experience attending the Special Olympics USA Games, and she said it exceeded every expectation. Watching Chad compete on the national stage was one of the proudest moments of my life, Cindy said, adding that he scored the game-winning goal that secured the trip to represent Massachusetts in Minnesota. Seeing him stand on the podium with his teammates, a bronze medal around his neck, is a memory our family will cherish forever. She noted the whole team worked incredibly hard to earn that opportunity, and said that what she appreciates about the Special Olympics is that it creates genuine inclusion and lifelong relationships. While Chad gained confidence, independence, and friendships, something equally meaningful happened on the sidelines, Cindy said. Practices and games became a place to celebrate successes, share ideas, discuss school challenges, exchange resources, and remind each other that we weren't alone. There was never judgment, only understanding, encouragement, and people who genuinely wanted the best for every athlete and family. That kind of community is invaluable. Chad said that for him, competing in the Special Olympics USA Games, along with his soccer teammates, quote, was unbelievable and an amazing experience. We all did our best, and I am so proud of my team, he said. I loved that we got to make so many great memories, and I got a stronger bond with my teammates. Cindy said she has seen firsthand how life-changing unified sports can be. While athletes build confidence, friendship, teamwork, and a true sense of belonging, the athletic partners become compassionate leaders who model acceptance, patience, and inclusion every single day. Families gain a community that celebrates together, problem solves together, and lifts one another up. Those relationships are just as meaningful as the competition. Unified sports doesn't just change the lives of the athletes. It changes everyone fortunate enough to be a part of it, Cindy said. It builds empathy, friendships, and stronger communities. I truly believe every school should have the opportunity like this because they don't just build better athletes. They build stronger, kinder, more inclusive communities. If more schools embrace programs like Unified Sports, I believe our schools and ultimately our world would be a better place. Through Special Olympics partnership with the New England Revolution, Chad is one of five Holden Youth Soccer Unified Team players selected for this year's Revolution Unified Team, as he was last year as well. On July 22nd, they'll take the field at Gillette Stadium against Toronto's Unified Team following the Revolution match, Cindy said. Reminiscing about their experience at Special Olympics USA Games, she said the opening ceremony was unforgettable, and Minnesota welcomed us with such kindness. Even while shopping at Walmart in our loud, proud Massachusetts t-shirts, complete strangers stopped us to wish our team good luck and welcome us to their state. That reflected the warmth we experienced throughout the week, Cindy said. Laura echoed those same sentiments, saying it was such a privilege to be a part of the Special Olympics USA Games and spend so much time with our families and our athletes and partners. Families of children with IDD face so many challenges, yet they remain some of the most open, generous, and welcoming people I've ever met, she said. They took me in from the very first day, and I've like always been a part of their circle. I am endlessly grateful to call them my friends. And now that the games are over, I truly miss spending so much time with them. She said that while her son, who she said had such a beautiful heart, takes his role as Unified Sports partner seriously, really, those are his friends, and his team has given him so much joy and purpose over the last 3 years. Watching him compete was incredible. They played their hearts out every game, and even though some tough losses, they never lost sight of what unified means, not just within the team, but with their opponents too, Laura said. After every game, they'd lock arms with the other team and walk across the field together to applaud the fans. Our team became known for embodying inclusion and honesty. It made it easy to cheer as loud as we did. We became known as the best fans in the entire game. Sean became fast friends with fellow player and same jersey number 11, Franklin Escobar, from the Washington, D.C. team, and they now follow each other on Instagram. He said that while it was very bittersweet, one of his favorite moments in Minneapolis was the closing ceremony. After fierce competition and rivalries, it was beautiful to see every delegation come together as one to recognize each other's efforts, Sean said. After all, Special Olympics is one team united, standing for a greater cause. If I learned anything at the National Games, it's that kindness, positivity, and empathy will unite us if we all give each other a chance. Next up, Sterling Fire celebrates promotions, new members, by Jan Goetzman. Members of the Sterling Fire Department gathered in celebration July 1st for a promotional and swearing-in ceremony while honoring one of their own lost. Chief Thomas Kokernick welcomed people to the ceremony. Over the last several months, we have been caught up in sort of a whirlwind of important things that have happened within the fire department. So, as one thing seemed to get overshadowed by the next, I wanted to get everyone together to take a second to pause and appreciate some of the important events that we've had. By far, the most significant thing has been the loss of Jim Emerton to cancer, Kokernick added. Jim's loss has affected us on many levels. We are just starting to realize the impact of not having him around, and that process is probably going to take some time for us to work through. As chief, it is important for me to preserve the integrity of what Jim meant to us and to recognize how important he was to this chapter of our department's history. In his memory, Kokernick issued a special order. It is with much sympathy and gratitude that I issue this directive ordering the immediate and permanent retirement of Sterling Fire Department Badge 38. Badge 38 was issued to and proudly worn by firefighter paramedic Jim Emerton. As an esteemed member of this fire department, firefighter Emerton represented our finest traditions, both as compassionate firefighter paramedic and as a loyal public servant who is dedicated to the craft of teaching others how to help people in their time of need. Firefighter Emerton passed away on May 16, 2026, following a battle with occupational cancer. His sacrifice serves as a solemn reminder that the dangers of our profession extend far beyond the emergency scene and often remain with us long after the fire has been extinguished. In recognition of Jim's extraordinary service and sacrifice, Badge 38 shall be permanently retired and will never again be assigned to any other member of this department. The retirement of this badge will stand as a lasting tribute to our appreciation for Jim and as a symbol of the debt of gratitude we owe for those who give so much in service of others. Jim's badge will forever represent his courage, compassion, commitment, and the enduring legacy he leaves within the department. May it remind each of us of the importance of protecting one another and treating the people we serve with compassion and empathy, and to never forget the sacrifices we must sometimes make in the performance of our duty. Along with honoring Emerton, several people were sworn into new positions. Steve Lutz, promoted to captain, has been a firefighter for more than 10 years. Along with overseeing regular day-to-day operations and incidents, Lutz will handle all fire prevention and community risk reduction roles. Kokernick said, Steve Lutz has served as acting captain in the Clinton Fire Department for almost 10 years while simultaneously working as a per diem firefighter here in Sterling. His background and the respect he earned amongst the ranks during his tenure as a per diem made him an easy choice to select for this role. Eric Aries, promoted to full-time lieutenant, has been within the fire service for more than 20 years and has served the Sterling Fire Department for 16. Aries is a paramedic and oversees all emergency medical service operations. Jimmy Aries, promoted to full-time lieutenant, has been in the fire service for more than 18 years. Jimmy Aries is a paramedic and brings vast knowledge and experience to the department. Jimmy and Eric come from a long line of family who has served as firefighters. Nick Finizio, promoted to on-call lieutenant, has been in the fire service for 12 years. Finizio is an EMT and brings extensive knowledge and skill with technical rescue operations. Daniel DJ Gaudette, promoted to on-call lieutenant, has been in the fire service for 13 years. Gaudette is also a paramedic and has served as a specialist in the Army National Guard. George Kinahan, sworn in as the department's assistant emergency medical director, has a vast background in and education in disaster management. Kinahan has years of experience serving on the Boston DMAT, the Disaster Medical Assistance Team, and FEMA International Medical Surgical Response Team. This position vacancy was created by the loss of Jim Emerton. Connor Wilbur was sworn in as the department's newest full-time firefighter paramedic. Connor has served the Sterling Fire Department as an on-call member since 2020. Connor has more than 6 years' experience in the fire service and has served as a Lance Corporal in the U.S. Marine Corps Reserve. Wilbur is assigned to Group 2. Quote, "These promotions and the addition of Firefighter Wilbur bring an exciting time of change and growth in the department," according to a post from the Sterling Fire Department. Now we have a letter to the editor, titled, "Thank You, Veterans Administration." Our dad, Randall Ferrante, a U.S. Navy veteran, lived with ALS, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease, for 3 years before he died in May 2026. ALS is always fatal, and within 1 year of his diagnosis, it left him wheelchair-dependent. U.S. military veterans are twice as likely to develop ALS. It is considered a service-connected disease by the Department of Defense. The one silver lining was our father's ALS care team at the Veterans Administration. Our VA social worker was core to his care. She enabled us to focus on caring for our dad. Our VA social worker made herself available to support the care, safety, and comfort of my father. She helped give my father back some of his independence by getting him the tools he needed, such as a motorized wheelchair and a modified van so he could come to Sunday dinners. She organized monthly clinics so he could see his whole care team in one day instead of making multiple trips into Boston. All of her hard work as a social worker gave us the gift of time and allowed us to just be his children. Importantly, the VA social worker helped us navigate the disability benefits owed to him so we did not have to go into debt. ALS.org estimates that the average person diagnosed will need to spend $250,000 for their care. While the VA was not fancy, it was a vision for how single-payer government health care could work for all of us. We wish all families with ALS or severe illness could access services like those provided by the VA. We realized within a month of his diagnosis that Dad needed to move out of his second-floor condo in Hudson. We had a hard time finding places to rent or buy that could accommodate his wheelchair near where we live in Princeton and Holden. The closest we found was a new condo in Clinton. The majority of housing in the area remains older, single-family homes with stairs and narrow driveways. There's a real lack of housing diversity for those people trying to stay in their communities as they age. E pluribus unum, out of many, one, is more than a motto. It is a reminder that we are the strongest when we take care of one another. Our father served our country, and when he needed help, dedicated public servants, accessible housing, and a community of support allowed him to live his final years with dignity and remain close to his family. We hope more families facing ALS or other serious illnesses will one day have access to the same kind of care and housing that made such a difference for ours. Caring for one another is not just an act of compassion. It is one of those ways we honor those who have served and strengthen those communities for everybody. Sincerely, the Ferrante family. This community news program is a production of Audio Journal and a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org. Or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I'm Will Ryan. Thank you for listening.